Welcome to A Canadian Investing in the U.S., a podcast and YouTube channel focused on Canadians buying real estate with host Glenn Sutherland.
Welcome to a new episode of A Canadian Investing in the U.S. With Glenn Sutherland. This week, my guest is Kelsey Ross, which after this episode, you might be rivaling a couple people for most been a guest the most amount of times on this show. So anyway, thanks for coming again. For people who, like, I know you're going to love this episode, even though I have no idea what we're going to talk about, but episode 83, episode 213 is another, some other episodes with Kelsey. His brother Carl was on 175. So if you like what we're talking about, go find the other ones as well. You might have to go back a little bit. I think 83 was done 4 years ago. So
wow.
It's been a few years we've been doing this. But anyway, Kelsey, let's just start off by, I guess, giving everyone a bit of an intro to yourself, and then we'll get into this.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks, Glenn. Again, my name is Kelsey Ross. I've been a real estate investor since 2005. I'll do a quick summary. I started out in Waterloo. I'm from, Toronto area. The first investment property was in Waterloo, student rental. Then from there, did student rental by York University, did two over there, then did another one over by University, UOIT in Oshawa. So I was always in this like student rental market, not even regular rental, just student rental market. Did that for some time, tried a coin laundry, failed miserably, decided to stay with the real estate. And then I really wanted to expand because, money was getting tight here as to, continue to get mortgages and so forth. So, looking into U.S. was something that I got introduced to. And really in 2006, when the dollar was near par, but I just didn't really take the risk at that point in time because I had a friend who moved down to Atlanta, but just wasn't ready mentally to take it on at that point. So in 2018, got exposed to some opportunities in Cleveland, Ohio. Then it opened me to the doors to some tax sale opportunities in Indiana. So that's kind of where the U.S. investing part has come in with me since 2018. So I'm still, I was still a veteran rookie. Like, I feel like still like a rookie at a lot of things I do, even though, it's been a couple of years, right?
Yeah, no, I get it. I had the same similar story too. I was doing investing in KW and Cambridge, and eventually I outgrew the banks. They weren't going to lend to me anymore, which was part of the reason to go to the U.S., but not the whole thing. There's a lot of reasons to do this. So, yeah. What have you been working on lately? We've been about a year since we chatted.
Yeah. So what I've been working on lately was recently completed a duplex that I bought at the tax sale in 2020. About that tax sale in 2020, but you get the deed by about early 2021. So we started working on that. No, I got it on 2021 and I got the deed 2022.
Okay.
So we started working on that last year. So we just completed it, tried to sell it actually vacant. It's a duplex, two unit on top of each other. Didn't really get any bites because, again, it was around this late November, December,
It's hard to sell stuff then. Like, it's, I find that like Americans, they don't want to move, like even to move into a property, they don't want to buy stuff between their Thanksgiving and New Year's. It's just,
right.
It's tough. That's a tough spot to sell.
Right. So, we tried, that didn't really work out. So what we did now is we actually had a property, we did a professional property manager and have both the units rented out now. And it's renting out for a good clip, I think, more than we anticipated.
That's good.
So now we'll go back to relist that one for sale with it, it's turnkey already, your cap rates, your this, your that, et cetera, to make it more, to, investors who don't want to get into the dirt and grime of things. They just want to turn around turnkey opportunity. So we're going to go that direction with that one. Working on two other rehabs as well, a single family and another duplex as well, working on those. And yeah, and then also still trying to keep active, pinching my pennies, but keeping active with buying, always buying. Like, I was able to, I'm just close to purchasing a property off of someone who bought off the tax sale, but they cannot manage it. So I'm going to pretty much get it for, pennies on the dollar, really, literally pennies on the dollar. So, always trying to keep active even when money's tied up in several different things, right? So,
yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And for those other properties, were those tax auctions as well?
The one, the duplex that we rented out that we're going to resell, that one was a tax sale. The other one that we're rehabbing, actually, you know what, Glenn? They're all from tax sale. One I bought, the other one, the single family, I bought off of my friend's friend. Again, same thing. She bought it at the tax sale. She couldn't manage it. And, you know, so I just bought it off her. You know, I gave her what she paid for it plus a little bit more. And, you know, so that one, you know, it's great. And the other one we bought off tax sale for about 3-4 years. We just couldn't get to it, couldn't get to it, couldn't get to it. And we finally able to get to it now.
Yep.
And which is a good thing because in that neighborhood, the new mayor has a thing where they're planning to demolish, I think, about 90 homes or 83 homes in this neighborhood of Gary. And
yep.
They've already demolished about 25. When I was there the other day, I counted 11 in like 4 minutes that
wow.
they had demolished. So they're giving people like 60-day notices and things of that nature. So you really got to get on it now. The investors who just sit on the properties, don't do anything with them. You know, you could find yourself with, you know, a demolished property plus a bill for the demolished as well, right? So.
Wow. Wow. That would be wild. And like for people who are listening, they're going, wow, you're just like sitting on properties. Maybe like people, it's a little different. Like when you buy stuff cheap, you can, you know, you buy it cheap and then it works into your schedule whenever you work. Like, I know, for people, like we listed the podcast episodes beforehand. So if you want to know more about taxis, we touched on that, all that before. But like what kind of price points, even like a range, are these sort of in? So people got a kind of an idea.
Like you're just buying off of the.
No, like for just the ones you were purchasing, like what kind of tax deed sort of
sure.
price points are you look at?
Yeah, you know, I'm still, man, I don't want to make it sound so biased because you're not, people listening may not run into the same situations.
Okay, everything's different. Exactly. Yeah.
But like the one that I'm purchasing off an individual right now, I think he may have bought it for $3,000, but I'm actually getting it for $1,000.
Yeah.
And he has another one that he bought for $500, but I'll give him $1,000 for that one. Do you know what I mean? Just to kind of balance things out or whatever. And then in turn with those, I might rehab those. Those may be ones I might just clear out because I actually had my arborist guy go there, walk it, give me a price to cut all the trees, clear all the garbage from the yard, and just turn and sell those. So I'm not sure. But it really depends, honestly. I'm still finding stuff sub 5,000. I've sold stuff sub 10,000. I had another property. I didn't want to get to that one because across the street, I know the guy who lives there and how they live. And across over there, there's a burnt house. So rehabbing houses on certain blocks, it may not always be the best or beneficial because, you know, you may make the house pretty, but the end buyer, they have to look outside at something every day. So that's one thing that I should say that I'll kind of tie that I've learned is that not every deal is a deal at the end of it.
Yep, that's a good note.
Right?
And like, so for these properties, so say you buy it cheap and you're like, it's not a big issue, right? Because it's, you know, if you're just, you know, a project that's, you know, $1,000, even $5,000 you put into purchase, it's not a big deal to let it sit until you're ready to go. Is there much for carrying costs on these? Are you having to pay taxes and any utilities? I'm assuming they're all cut. What kind of expenses do you have while you're waiting for this to go?
Sure. It kind of goes at different various stages because like the taxes are ultra cheap, especially ones you've got off a tax sale or been sitting vacant, you know, ultra cheap. Some have been as low as like $75 every 6 months, you know, under, you know, all of them are under $500 a year for taxes that I have at this point. They're all under 500, you know, carrying costs. You may have electric on where you're starting the rehab. So usually you get the electric on early so you can go and work or we can have guys go and work there and so forth. So, you know, minimal carrying costs, I should say, the way we do it at this point in time with those type of purchases. And like you were saying, that's why we could kind of hold on to them and not having to rush into it as to if I have a hard money loan or a mortgage where, like, you know, every month you're looking at that interest and that payment that you pay, you really feel like you have to get to it.
You have to go,
With these, they're in your pocket. Like, you know what? Let me make the economic decision here. Let me use the economic person that makes sense here. I don't have to rush with everything, right?
At what point do you put the insurance on the property?
Hello, everybody. Thanks for listening to the podcast. I just wanted to let you know that I've created a new coaching program. I believe the new coaching program has way more value than any of the programs that have even existed in the past. What we've done is pre-recorded all the lessons so that you can work through it at your own pace, which is pretty cool. And then we're going to meet up on a regular basis to answer the questions, do deal analysis, and actually spend our time together working on things instead of spending our time learning things. I think this will make a seamless transition to buying in the United States and will help you solve a lot of your problems. If this is of interest to you, go to glensutherland.com/coaching. I hope to help you guys invest in the United States, and I hope we provide as much value as possible. Back to the podcast.
Oh, so depends on which property, how that property is valued. But usually by the time we get electric and water on, then we're buying the insurance for the property as well.
Yeah, just so then you have that stuff covered. That makes a lot of sense. So you're
not. Active... I want to say, Glenn, it depends on how much you pay for something and your risk threshold. Because really and truly, I should say, by the time you get the property, you should be buying insurance. That's the right advice. But I'm just being honest, because a lot of real estate investors, each situation may go on a different path. But to say it by the book, you should get insurance as soon as you get the property. Right. But
yes, you know what? That actually brought up a good story for me. Even my property manager, because I do like a weekly meeting with them, like you should be. But about, I think it was in the fall this year, I was having a call with them and they're like, just so you know, we had a property that closed and the previous owner burnt it down the day afterwards and they hadn't put their insurance on yet. But we're talking like $100,000 house in cash.
Oh, that's different. Yeah.
That's totally like you should be lining this up with your closing, right? But so they're in. But honestly, when there's arson, then it's a totally different ballpark. It might take you some time to get that money back.
Yes.
But and who knows if that seller even has the funds to do it? I guess you gave them $100,000, so I guess they do. but anyway, it might be a bit of a pain. But do put in, like I said, do put in. But it's all about threshold, like you said. So if you bought a $5,000 house, and if it burnt down, would you be okay with that? Like, would that, would that ruin you or would it not ruin you? And everyone's going to be in a different point of view. And they might even go, a $30,000 house, would that ruin me or not ruin me? And then especially since some of the insurance carriers are going to say the minimum per square foot is this.
Right.
So we're going to charge you $1,000, $2,000 a year, depending on where it is and what it is and size of it and everything else. Right. So it you have to make sense. If you're just going to let it sit there and it's $500 or $5,000, it may not make sense, right?
Correct. Because you're going to start getting to rehab, and depending on the type of insurance and so forth that you have, some have like 6 month insurance that they'll give you and so forth. So maybe you don't want to sit again. You should get insurance as soon as you buy a property. But if you're in a situation where it's like I said, I bought a house for $1,000 or $2,000.
Yeah.
I value all dollars. But if something really happens badly to that, the house usually needs a full rehab anyways, right? I mean, we don't want to burn it down, but again.
Yeah. The other side of the coin too. Like, I don't know if I often put it on, I don't think on the podcast, but I had a property about a year and a half ago in Dayton, Ohio, and the, it burnt down and they gave you insurance, but it's, if you insured that thing for $150,000, even if you haven't started the reno yet, they pay out insurance based on what you've bought insurance for. So for me, I always call it the easiest flip I've ever done in my life.
Right.
But anyway, so there's both sides of this coin. You're just like me. We're both buying, we're both selling, we're both, renovating during this interesting market cycle we're in now. Have you found that you've changed anything, the way you're doing anything? Is there any risks that are concerning with you during this period? And, how do you mitigate this? What are you doing differently over this last year?
Sure. So I really just back, I wanted to move away from the full gut rehab stuff. I really wanted to move into, different higher price points and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But the little bit of time at this point, I've just reverted back to like, I'm just running into some of these deals where it's just too hard to ignore. So, I'm trying not to hunt for full rehabs because I really want to pick up speed with stuff, right? And with full rehabs, really sitting vacant homes, you have to almost touch everything. But I will say turnkey, I never use the term. Thinking about it, I've always really bought and sold turnkey properties, but more and more the lingo of the turnkey, I think that's more in the forefront. The previous home I sold as well, I had it using as kind of like a Airbnb when people would come into town. When I would come into town, I would stay there. When my friends would come to town to look on their properties, they would stay there. Was going to sell it vacant. It didn't sell. I got a tenant in it. I got a really good, my property manager got a really great rental. I think $1,350 for the property was renting for a single family home, 3 bedroom, 1 bathroom. I thought I was going to get maybe like $900. So, I sold it for only $85,000. So the buyer, they stuck with the deal, even though I had to get clear title again, an issue with the title, but they still really want it because again, they're buying for 85, they're getting a turnkey 1,350 rent right away. That those are good numbers. I'm not sure
Good
the cap
numbers.
percentage, but just by head, those are good numbers. So I've turned to more the model of turnkey. So like again, the other duplex we're talking about is going to be the same way, now listed as a turnkey. So we're hunting those investors who are just looking for something that they could just get and go right away instead of the ones there where it's vacant and it's not an end user. Like, retail is fine to sell, vacant, but now one's more investor type neighborhoods or investor type properties. I feel like this is a better direction to go.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. When people are buying properties, like I'm assuming this is a Canadian that bought it, or maybe it's an American. But
American.
if American, okay. But if a Canadian was to buy this, like I know that lending maybe a year or 2 years ago, they basically would lend on even a $50,000 property. I'm finding that it's like getting higher the thresholds of what they'll lend on. Is that going to be a concern with selling properties under 100K?
No, because most of mine are not under 100. There was just that
Oh,
one. I
just that
was
one.
kind of.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was just kind of pressed. Really, if I had waited till now to sell, I could probably sell. But you know how this investor thing goes
Oh, yeah.
sometimes. The
Time's
money
money.
ain't tight. Hey, liquidate, right?
Yep.
So, majority of the stuff of being in the range of say 130 to 160.
Oh,
That's
they're
kind of
golden then for financing then. Yeah.
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And my friends just sold one. Was supposed to be closing April 1st. They sold for 170. They set like a new record on that block for price wise, like
Nice.
valuation wise. On the block as well. And hopefully once we sell this one that we have as well, we'll set a new record for this block that we have. And we've also, I'm straying sideways, but everything's attached because we're all investment conversation. What we've done with when what we do with a lot of these homes that are vacant, we help build back the block for real because we help see the vision for investors who are thinking about it. So five multiplexes have been sold since we started and finished the rehab on the brick duplex that we have right now. So that's five that have been bought, and there's three that's currently being rehabbed as we speak. And I know two were sold at in the auction of last year, so they'll get their deed probably anytime now. So maybe they'll start rehabbing. But again, we spurred that momentum on the block, right? Which is going to do good for us, do good for the neighborhood, and do good for other investors as well. So, and do good for the city
Oh,
because now
yeah.
they'll be getting taxes from a block where there wasn't barely any tax influx from, right? So,
Yeah. No, I've done both where I've started that sort of thing, and then I see the dumpsters show up afterwards. And I've also seen like, hey, I'm like, contractor, you want to walk this property for me? And then they go over and they're like, hey, just so you know, there's dumpsters in front of two houses. And I'm like, that's a good sign. Like maybe I
right.
can comp against them. And I'm like, okay, do you have the addresses? And I go look these up, what they bought these things for. What are they doing? Right? Because
Definitely.
with all of this, even still, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. There's other people doing the same things as us, right? Out there, right? You
Well, I want
touched
to touch
on.
on one thing quick, Glenn, because you made mention of like how what I've done different and what we're doing different is another thing of like, that talk of driving for dollars. We're taking that really way more seriously now. We're driving to check this property. Oh, take down this address. Oh, prop stream. Oh, reverse search address. Oh, send them a letter. Like, this is real. It used to be theory to me, but when you're in it and you actually have contacts with so many people in and around you and have the time to connect these people, there's a lot of people that just don't want it, can't manage it, or it's just a bother, right? So
Yeah.
That's another thing that we've been doing.
And I've done this before too, is like it's kind of expensive now. I used to get maps. Like, paper maps of like cities. And then if you're like when I'm doing Canadian investing, I'm like, hey, if I could do a duplex conversion, I'm like, and I start marking the roads with that had the ones that were duplexable, right? They had the right sort of look. And in the States, you could start marking the ones that are your stuff, right? So you're a little bit more focused because there is deals on the MLS, right? But if you look at a city, it's just overwhelming, and you just start marking it up. You just, but those maps are getting like, I remember being down in I was in Michigan in just before Christmas, and I was down in Ohio and went to Kentucky, and I was just like, I just went to the gas station, like, can I get a map? And they're like, no. They're like, use your phone. They literally said, just use your phone. And I'm like, that's not what I want. I'm like, I want a map. But I'm like, if you try and buy them from Canada, you got to pay for international shipping, and they want like $40 for a map. You're like, this is getting stupid for like a $4 map. But
Crazy. It's crazy.
anyway, yeah, it's with a lot of this stuff, you just figure out where it is, what your spots are. There's certain roads. There was one road in well, anyway, I've just be you just start working on house, and then your next house comps against it. I had two fourplexes right next door to each other, and so you get the one and you get the good appraisal on that one. You're like, hey, it's time to refi or get the something going on the other one, because we now have a good comp right next door, even though it's one I own as well. But just like, and then you'll see, because I even my property manager will tell me, hey, one of the other investors here, you should have this conversation with your property manager. They're like, hey, somebody else who I manage for has another fourplex in that area, and they just got a refi and they got this value. And I'm like, oh, time for me to go get a refi too. I'm like, need appraisal right now. I want to comp against that guy. And it's brand new. It's going to show up as on the list. So,
That's
ask
one
your
thing
team.
we haven't done yet. We every time there's just something else, it is try actual refinance. Have you done one recently, and how was that kind of going for you as well?
We haven't done one since the fall,
Okay.
early fall. Honestly, right now I'm in kind of a hold period. I just got my E2 visa in November.
Congratulations.
And yeah, so some of the lenders will look at that like an American and use my ITIN credit score to qualify me. And some of them will say an ITIN credit score is for a foreign national. And so you get stuck back in the foreign national program. So what I really need to do is go down to the US, go to a social security office, get a social security number now that I have a visa, and then I can get American lending. So right now I'm kind of on hold for that. For people who are wondering when we're recording this, we're recording this March 21st. So I believe this afternoon the Fed's making an announcement. This probably won't come out for, I think, for 2 weeks, but so it'll still be pretty recent. But based on that conversation, it might be whether I'm going to do refis again, right? So some of the banks right now are going like what they'd call in Canada like prime minus, like, right? So they're just to get loans because they need in the business of doing loans, and no one's doing anything,
Correct.
even including myself. I'm like, I'm not doing refis until I figure out what the Fed's going to do, right? So, because I'm like, why would I pay this rate if I could wait a, like 3 months and get this rate? I'm like, so I think, and the Fed in the, maybe I'm going on a rant, but back in November when they said that they were going to do three rate drops in 2024, it just was, I think it put the market on hold, which it sucks. But like, people are like, well, why would I buy now if it's going to be cheaper for my mortgage payment if I wait 6 months, right? So they're just like, it just slowed the market even worse, which wasn't a great idea. But if you're like, say, a lease option or a contract for deed sort of seller, like, that's what they want, right? Because they're like, hey, get the property, I'll get the house I want right now, and then I'll buy it based on today's prices. Well, they're, could be deflated. As soon as the rates drop, prices will go up. So they'll get a better appraisal. Like, there's a lot of options. Anyway, I'm going on a side
Yeah,
rant,
no, but I
but
think that you made a point that because everything kind of connects with when it comes to like the market and what most of the people we are selling to are new home buyers, first time buyers, and so forth. So where this talking about the market and rates and how this affects ones who are maybe flipping or even to hold or what you're looking to do, but say flipping, for example, you have to try and make sure that these properties are pretty much have all the bells and whistles. Your AC unit, your little pretty backsplash or pretty painting or some accent wall or some nice lights. Or I think you really have to, from I'm seeing what's sitting on the market and based on what we kind of been through as well, is that the small things, the end points for the new home buyers are very important to make sure things actually turn over in this market, in my eyes, in the market that we have.
Yeah, and I deal with a lot of the same sort of price points for sales with the 150 to 200 sort of mark. And when you're in those neighborhoods, like we both are, my new policy is to put a cage on the air conditioner.
Oh, wow, great.
I just had another one stolen just last week, and I'm just like, all right, enough of it, enough. I'm like, it was, the house was for sale, listed on the market, and the realtor's like, there's no air conditioner anymore.
Right. Oh. Hey, listen, because I'm pretty, how do I say this? socially correct. But I'm pretty, I'm pretty attached in neighborhoods. So when I hear the calls saying, hey, I have AC units, I'm like, well, first of all, no way. But then I also know that, hey, you know, it's an easy spree, right? So you'll hear the calls from people, you know, guys who work with you, work with someone else saying, oh, they got AC units. Those are obviously the number one, one of the number one things stolen, right? So you either have to have them caged, a fence around them so people can't see them, so that you can't see them, because mm-hmm. sometimes you build little fences around them so you just, well, you know, out of sight, out of mind situation. But a minimum, a cage, you know, some, we even had two where we had them caged, but they weren't even sealed in the ground. But just the mere fact that, you know what I mean? They're in the yeah. ground and yeah. so forth. But yeah.
But it happens even, I had like a $400,000 property in the down in Florida maybe 3 years ago. And the AC got stolen on that too. And it happens yeah. at all different price points and all different places. Usually you're like, well, that's a nice neighborhood, all those, but it still happens.
And I want to say that quickly as well, because yes, a lot of the neighborhoods I work in have maybe, you know, you're not seeing the highest value, whatnot, but these things, of all the different things, happen in different magnitudes in every real estate environment. Your $1 million homes, you got $1 million thieves. You know, your middle age home, middle value homes, you got middle value thieves. They're stealing different things. They might be selling more equipment. They may be selling whole pallets of stuff that are at your property. There's different things. There's the, you know, on the lower end, the quick smash and grab, steal your AC, break in, try and steal your water tank or something like that. So there is thefts and these things at all different levels of this as well.
Yep. Yes. Yeah, just protect yourself. And
correct.
AC cage is a good idea. Yeah. Especially in a vacant house. If yes. you're, and even if it's for sale, that doesn't deter them because there's
Do
nobody
you leave
there.
Lights on at your vacant homes?
Honestly, probably not.
Oh, I always.
I'm not there. Right. So I'm, right. It's kind of on the realtors or the, you know, project manager or whatever, but it's actually not a bad
cost.
Idea.
That's the holding cost. Like that is something I do leave on a light upstairs. If there's upstairs, downstairs, a front light, have a dusk till dawn light. There's just some things that are, you know, help a little bit deter, or at minimum, you know, people can study you and know really, but an all darked out house. No.
I wonder if there's like a service just to park a car in the driveway. So it looks like somebody's actually there, right?
Cameras, you use cameras?
So I used to use cameras, and then they, honestly, it turned into an expense because they just kept getting stolen. So every time, and it wasn't by like who you'd think. So we'd finish the project and have cameras, or be working on, I have cameras. And then we finish the project, and then it sells or it refinances. And the cameras would just go missing. And you're like, you don't know who, because there's so many people with keys. Was it the project manager? Was it the property manager? Was it the contractor? Was it the realtor? And you're just like, you start sending emails and you just never track down these cameras. And you're just like, okay, it turned into like a line item. Like, okay, we're going to buy another $250 set of cameras for this project again. Right. And they just kept disappearing. So what we then switched to doing was renting the cameras.
Okay.
And like sometimes a property manager will rent the cameras.
Right.
And you know what? they're going to make sure they get them collected, right? Yeah. So it's, and if they don't, if you like talk to a property manager or someone who, or a project manager is managing it for you, you're like, hey, you can make some extra money. Go buy these cameras for $300. I'll rent them off you monthly. You'll make money on these. And yeah, it's, it could be a win-win for them, right? I don't know.
you're opening a discussion. Maybe, you know, in the future, if we ever discuss again, is property management. Because a lot of us believe that, you know, you just get a property manager and things are good to go. There's many levels: repairs, collecting the money, disbursing the money to you, the correct disbursements to you. So there's many of things. Are they vetting the people? You know, there's many of things when it comes to property management, but I just want to say that quickly, but that can open a whole other conversation, as you're probably aware as well.
Oh yeah. I just did maybe a month ago, I recorded a new video for my course, and it is like an hour and a half of just property management. Just like that one, I think of them as a trade, but like that one trade, just like, there's a lot of stuff, even when you're interviewing them, to understand what they're doing, because they're not created equally. The statements are like the contracts are not the same. People include stuff, don't include stuff. Some people hire electricians, some people have them on staff. It can be vastly different.
And your property may differentiate how and what type of property manager you're going to use, because we have a property manager that kind of generally manages, but we kind of handle everything else. And then we have one that's full service, does everything, all the line items, everything. So it really depends on your property, what you need as well. But, you know, it's good to have a good one, because, you know, weird things happen, strange things happen. So you want to have someone who's...
In all honesty, if you're starting out and you're planning on having a lot of properties, I usually will say start out with two property managers, one for your, a new one for your second one, because at that point it's not offensive to them. But if you go, because everyone's like, I'll do that later. This has happened to me. You go get like 20 properties in a market and you're like, okay, I'm going to add a new property manager to mix this up. Then they're really offended. What is happening? You're not going to work with us anymore. You're taking this away. You're like, it hurts your relationship a little bit. But if you did it right from the start, you're like, look, I'm splitting it just because. It's nothing wrong with you or them, but like, stuff happens. Sometimes I had a guest on a show, and they had a small little company, and the property manager was like 60 and he died. Mm. And there was like, the staff just weren't, there was only like two other staff, and they weren't able to like just run a company after he's dead. Basically the company's done. Wow. And they're just like, no one's collecting rent. No one's doing this. He had like 30 properties that weren't getting rent collected. And it was just like, I think he jumped on a plane and flew there, 'cause he's just like, you know, you don't want to be in that situation. It'd be much nicer to say, I have all the contracts. You call up your other one. Here you go. You're the property manager for another whole pile of properties, and let's just continue.
Right, right.
Anyway, there's a little couple tips.
You know, property, like I said, you know, it's, I don't want to stay long because we're just kind of bouncing through things, but, you know, I probably manage every property I had here in Ontario. So releasing and removing myself from being managing ultra hard initially. Like I'm still with them. Like, you still have to run stuff by us, because I don't want you just to make some wild ass decision. You still have to contact us, especially if it's out of control. Unfortunately, because of my spirit and my energy and who I am, I still make contacts. Like, one of the buildings we have down in Indiana, some of the tenants know me, so they still have my number. You know, but it has saved us thousands of dollars because of specific issues. So I'm not suggesting it to anyone, but sometimes it kind of goes like that. In certain relationships, it's just like that.
Yeah. And I know back, I don't know, 5-10 minutes ago, you were talking about staying away from full rehabs, like just to bring our conversation back to what we're doing different in this market. Right.
Yes.
And it's one thing that I've honestly started doing too. But it's way more competitive buying less, you know, closer to rent ready, like cosmetic rehabs. Everybody wants those. Right. Everybody wants those. You're going to be, it's a much more competitive market. So if you don't have an advantage with like the wholesaler or somebody, it's tough. But if they know you're a buyer, a lot of times they'll just take your offer, even if it's lower. But I don't want to compete. and I still, I don't want to do full rehabs, because they take longer, right?
Yeah.
They take a lot longer. And there's a lot of money in it, but the thing is, what if the market changes? There's a lot of what if the Fed doesn't do this? What if, a year or two ago when everything was going up, you're like, hey, it goes long, we make extra money.
Right.
And now you might still make the same. You might make a little bit extra. Some of my stuff in certain markets have actually went up through the renovation. But for my underwriting, I'm banking on it going down.
Right.
Like when I'm pulling comps, I'm playing her safe, right? So anyways, it's something to think about. I've been buying just more cosmetic style instead of
Yes.
the full rehab, something we can get in and out of in like a month, maybe 2 months, instead of some of the stuff where we might be in permits for 2 months. Mind you,
Right.
I am doing a project in Kansas City where we did go into permits for 2 months, but it's a primo deal.
Okay.
It had to make sense, right? But I don't want to be in permits for 2 months, right?
Well,
I don't
that's
want to get.
long.
And the reason it was so long is because we had to do we're redoing the whole house,
Okay,
so we had to
structural
get
and so forth.
structural permits, which are slower, and then drawings that had to get approved because we're moving walls and stuff, and it's attached to the structural, so that you it slows everything down.
Right. It definitely can slow it down. Because it's recording, this is going on. I'm not going to tell you how long we take to get permits, but close your eyes and open your eyes. No, but that depending on your market, how that permit thing goes, that definitely affect you. And like I said, so far, like in the market with regards to rehab, like we've seen, I'm not gonna lie, it's been a even in the slow times, being a steady, because the market was so depressed dollar wise. Even with the slow, it's still going up, and there's still so many people in that new home buying area that are still able to get mortgage. Maybe you're even sometimes a closing, a kickback on the closing to make things happen as well, as long as you're pricing accordingly. But right now, at this point in time, I think it's the product. When I'm seeing the market that we're in, the product has to be on point as possible. If you're looking to market it to investors, you're probably best to have a turnkey with good numbers. If you're doing to end to a retail flip, you better have like it really ready to go. A fridge, a stove in there as well, or microwave event. Like I see a lot of houses sold with no kitchen fixtures, no appliances, sometimes no gutters on them and so forth. So in my eyes, have it finished as to the T as possible. So it's really turnkey for the retail buyer as well. And I think, what I'm seeing sold, what we've sold recently, I see that being the biggest thing. Where I, one that dragged out and took long to sell, I didn't have the nicest finishes. It was just kind of blah, right? So it ended up being me having to put a tenant into it and sell to an investor rather than an end buyer with a retail sale, right? So that's kind of.
Speed is important right now, and turnkey is more appealing because depending how you look at this, we could be at, I maybe I'm not going to say predictions or anything, but we could be at the bottom, right?
Right.
And some of these can make more sense now, but a lot of it is you just don't want to be tied up in these. I'm tired the same way of getting tied up in rehabs that go way too long.
Yeah.
It because it hurts. It honestly hurts you mentally just because it takes so long and you're dealing with these people like contractors on the same project for too long. And it if you have like raised money, it could hurt you in payments. If you have joint ventures, it's just going too long. It hurts their returns,
Right.
right? And so it's time's money right now, right? I'd much rather get into something that's a lot closer to rent ready or sell ready. Get the stuff in it, get it out, or even, we bought in the summer, we bought, I think, a package of three properties that were basically rent ready, but we got them at a good price. So
Right.
based on our analysis and then my realtor's analysis, we are buying them at like, 65 cents on the dollar, but they were tenanted and paying, and how they had rent rolls to show that they've been paying. So we're like, all right, well, we'll just refi as soon as the Fed rate drops.
Right. No, that's really, like I said, I start out saying that, still get sucked back into full rehab, but really that I know really to pick up speed with what we're doing at this point in time, it really has to be closer to cosmetic ones. It's just it's hard to turn a blind eye to the ones with the juice to squeeze, right? But again, it's yeah. These after I purge these last ones out of my system, then we'll turn a different direction. So We'll see how it goes.
Awesome. Kelsey, well, maybe I'll get you back again. If people wanted to get a hold of you, maybe I'm just wrapping this up, but if people wanted to get a hold of you, how do they track you down?
Sure. I do have on what's up? On Instagram, I'm most high RBG. On Facebook, I am KE Ross. On YouTube, I think I'm RBG Investments. I post some videos of some of the stuff that I do
Yeah.
as I
I like to
travel.
watch the videos. I like to see what's going on, right?
I'm gonna get a 4K camera and a mic so like I can really be in the trenches and show people, because that's why I like to show people a lot of the stuff that actually takes place. I go and I be with the contractors, go through the mud, go through exactly and see the grime of things as well. So you guys can find me there, or maybe a link I'll give to Glenn or something.
Sure.
But no, peace to all the Canadians and peace to you, Glenn. Thank you very much for what you have put out, what you've provided for Canadians. Because trust me, you're such a great asset
Well,
to
thank
all
you.
of us who are looking south of the border.
Well, thanks to you too as well. Like, I've seen you present, and you've been a guest multiple times, so you're giving back as well, right? I think that's what it's all about, because we don't need to have a whole bunch of us reinvent the wheel and struggle. It's just let's like just build off each other and do this a lot quicker and easier.
That was a nice video. Bye.